Welcome to the Catastrophic Comeback Podcast with American injury lawyer Clark Speaks, helping you find hope, purpose, and joy after a catastrophic injury.
Hi, welcome to Catastrophic Comeback. I'm here with my guest, Dr. Eric Bendix. Dr. Bendix, thank you for being here. I appreciate you coming.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You're a doctor. What kind of doctor are you, and what kinds of people do you see? Under what circumstances would you see someone?
Sure, I'm an orthopedic surgeon. So, orthopedic surgeon is a medical specialist who focuses on diseases, injuries, conditions of the musculoskeletal system. So that means bones, ligaments, muscles, tendons, joints, discs, nerves. Interesting, within orthopedics, there's several different subspecialty areas. So there's probably at least a good 10 different areas. One is hip and knee reconstruction. So that deals with replacing damaged or worn out hips and knees. Another area is hand. And as it says, it's really just dealing with conditions of the hand, injuries of the hand. And another area is spine. That's my area of interest. So I focus on injuries, infections, cancers of the neck, mid, and low back. And we treat that with conservative care and with surgical care. It just depends on the patient. And by conservative care, that would mean time, rest, pills, therapies, injections. If those things aren't working and they continue to have pain and they have tests or x-rays or MRIs or CT scans that show an area that's injured that could be helped with surgery, then surgery may be an option.
What are some of the things that might cause someone to need to come see you?
For us, really, it's the vast majority of what we tend to see tends to be injuries. So weekend warriors, they're lifting the lawnmower out of the tool shed and they wrench their back, or they're out in the backyard playing with their kids and throwing the football around and hurt their shoulder. We tend to see a fair amount of that. One of the biggest mechanisms of injury is car accidents. That's just everybody has a car and everyone's driving around, and they often get into accidents, especially now with people having smartphones. There's a little bit more distracted driving and people bump into each other and they'll get a banged up knee or back or shoulder, and we'll see folks that have been injured that way. And also people that can be injured on the job. You lift up a heavy bucket of bolts or something like that, or you're a roofer and you slip and fall off a roof, that can cause injuries. Interestingly enough, that's actually what got me into orthopedics. As my dad and I, when I was a lot younger, we had a cedar shake roof, and every spring you'd have to go up and replace the shingles that got broken from the hailstorms, and we'd go up there and do that. And my dad, one year, slipped and fell off the roof, broke his ankle. And the doctor who put him back together ended up kind of taking me under his wing. And over the years, I'd go back and visit him. And I was just absolutely amazed. Orthopedics, it was just carpentry. It's just putting broken things back together. And that ultimately is what led me into orthopedics. And now I'm seeing those same people falling off of roofs and fixing them.
Well, that's cool. So where did you grow up?
Grew up in a little bit all over. When I was born in Rome, Italy, lived there for 4 years. So that was my first language, along with English. Then we moved to London, lived in London for a couple of years, and then moved in 76 to Dallas, Texas. And we were there for the next 20 or so years.
Wow.
And did undergrad, college. Started off at Johns Hopkins up in Baltimore, and then transferred back to Texas and finished out at the University of Texas, the real UT. And then after that, went to medical school, also University of Texas Southwestern, which is in Dallas, and then finished up there in 96. And at that time, you know, I'd lived most of my life inland, and so I wanted to move somewhere in the Southeast Conference, somewhere by the water, to do my residency. And I was lucky enough to be able to match with a program in Miami, and so I did my 5-year orthopedic surgery residency program in Miami. So for folks that don't know, a residency program is your training. You're already a doctor, you know, when you graduate from med school, but you don't really know a whole lot. You know, right, the basics, but you don't know how to operate. You don't know how to, you know, be a cardiologist or any of that stuff. So you have to do more training, and that's what residency is.
That's where you get your on-the-job training.
Exactly. So you're an MD, you just don't have really a whole lot of knowledge in anything, not to be a family practice doctor, not to be a dermatologist, not to be a brain surgeon. You just have the basic skill set. And so that's what a residency is.
Law is similar in the sense that you get out and you have a degree and you're legally capable of representing people, but you know, you don't necessarily know exactly what to do. So we have the School of Hard Knocks, and I think that your way sounds better.
Yeah. Quite frankly, even after you've done your residency, which residencies within medicine tend to be 3 to 5 or so years long, even then you're still there's still a learning curve. There's still a lot to learn when you get out, you know. And when you're in your fellowship, your residency, sorry, you have your residency, and for orthopedics is 5 years, and then you finish that. You can even do more. You can do more training on top of that. It's called a fellowship. And within orthopedics, there's all those 10 different areas.
Sure, yeah.
You can do a fellowship in pediatrics, so that would be specializing in musculoskeletal issues in kids. Mine was in spine. So I did an extra year up in Rochester, University of Rochester, an additional year just focusing on just spine surgery, and learned a heck of a lot up there. It's a great program. But even then, when you get out, it's still quite nerve-wracking. You're starting off, you know, doing your first case, your first surgery, and there's nobody around to hold your hand. You're doing it yourself. But, you know, if you've had good training, you should be able to get through it and be just fine.
And when you finished your training, so just to recap, you know, you grew up in Europe, come to Dallas, go to college, go to graduate school, go to medical school, do your residency, do your fellowship, and then what? Do you open your own practice? Do you go work for another practice, or how does that work?
You know, during my lifetime here, that's changed. When I came out, when I finished all of my training, my fellowship, that was a period of time when most people still went into what's called private practice. You hung a shingle, you did your own thing, or you joined a group in town, you know, an orthopedic group or a dermatology group or a cardiology group. And that was back in 2002. Since then, from 2002 to now, we're already in 2024. Back then, joining or becoming an employed doctor is what it was. Really was, it was Kaiser. That was one of the big employers back then, but not much else.
Big HMO that was
Big old health company. They're out in California and have since branched across the country. They were one of the few that was an employer of physicians back then. And so you came out, you went into private practice. That's probably like 95% of people came out and they did private practice. 5% became employed. Now that ratio is probably just the opposite. Now hospitals now basically own doctor groups. Other doctor groups have kind of coalesced into really super groups or whatever. And so you're mostly an employed doctor. You're no longer really just an independent physician. And there's plus minuses to that. There's always the good and the bad. But that certainly has changed in the time frame now in 2024. Going to private practice is very rare.
And you went into private practice. You started your own shop.
Started my own shop, and that was definitely the School of Hard Knocks. Started my own group with two other buddies, and that was 2002. We got a hospital, a local hospital in our area, recruited us to come work in that county, and we started there. But we were decent doctors, but horrible businessmen. And so, unfortunately, that business folded. And then from there, I joined another group and was with them for a couple of years. And then I went from the small group that I own, that was great, but we didn't run it well, to a very large group where I really didn't have much say, and that wasn't really for me. And so then I left that second group and joined a much smaller group, which is a much better fit for me, and still learned, it wasn't my own shop or my own group, but I got to practice quite a bit independently and learned quite a bit, and then ultimately branched out from there and then started my own practice in 2015, it was.
And what's the name of your own practice?
Our practice here in North Carolina is Apex Orthopedics, Spine, and Neurology.
And you have offices in different places.
What
places?
Yes, we originally started in Georgia, and that was Georgia Spine and Orthopedics, and still is. And we've grown to have about 8 offices throughout North and Central Georgia. And then when COVID came along, there was the license requirements for medical doctors was relaxed during that period of time in anticipation for there being a need for doctors to be able to practice across state lines in case there was a significant healthcare need for that. And so the federal government and the local agencies were really thinking way ahead there and anticipating if there's any issues, we need to be ahead of the curve rather than behind. And so they relaxed the licensing requirements during that time. And so it was, I viewed it as an opportunity to see, okay, let's set up shop in another area and see if perhaps things can work. So during that time, telemedicine was also taking off. Back before 2019, telemedicine was around. So the concept of telemedicine is being able to speak via some sort of web-enabled platform or digital platform to be able to speak with your healthcare provider, but not be in the same room. So they could be right. somewhere else
like
in the city
your
or state.
Doctor or your nurse or your PA or something on a Zoom call as opposed to face-to-face.
Correct. And still being able to do a health interview, an examination of the patient, and then come up with a treatment plan. That is the basic essence of telemedicine. That was already around before COVID, but people really didn't latch on to it much. And in fact, we already had we had a telemedicine platform that we used occasionally, just because some folks that are out in the country or far away or don't have access to transportation, that was the only way to be able to give them care that they needed. But it really wasn't something that the local population really latched on to. Once COVID hit, it was an immediate switch. Everybody immediately latched onto it. And now, you know, now it's here to stay. And it's a great, to me, I think it's been a massive boost for technology and for the delivery of healthcare to be able to access people that wouldn't otherwise get access to care and to do it so efficiently. You can see, you know, imagine going to your doctor. You got to get in the car. You got to drive 15 minutes if you're lucky, 30 minutes if you're not or more, sit in their waiting room. And as much as I would hope my waiting room goes quickly, the reality is you might be there 10 minutes, you might be there 30 minutes, who knows? And some doctor's office, perhaps even more. Then they bring you back. You wait in the room another 5-10 minutes. The doctor strobes in for 2-3 minutes, and then they're gone. You're like, what'd they say? I didn't even catch what they said. And they're already gone. And then now you got to drive another 15 to 30 minutes home. You spent 2, maybe 3 hours. Now with telemedicine, it's literally, oh, I have my appointment at 9:15 in the morning. They might be a couple minutes late. You see the doctor, they log in on their little HIPAA-compliant computer telemedicine platform. You see them at 9:22, and it's just you and them talking with no interference from anybody. By 9:32, you're done. And you're still in your pajamas, and the doctor is on to the next patient. And I would say from the just speaking about is such a powerful technological tool because now the doctor can see more patients in a shorter time frame. And then from the patient's perspective, they don't have to miss so much time from work or from school. I'll see people literally at work. They work in a warehouse or whatever. They'll just walk out the door, do my interview with them for 5-6 minutes, boom, and they're right back to work. And so I think that's a big benefit just overall. A societal benefit.
Sure, yeah.
The cost of all that lost time is now can disappear.
Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.